this. Okay.
Hello and welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast. This is episode number 134 for May 29th, 2008. This is your host, Logan Decker, and I'm joined today by Editor-in-Chief, Christian Salvatore.
Let's go, Oakland.
Senior Associate Editor, Dan Stapleton.
I'm completely indifferent to Oakland.
Ex-Senior Executive Intern, Norman Chan.
Let's go to the mall.
With producer Andy Bellman on drums and percussion.
Don't you guys get shot in Oakland?
Oh, don't be like that.
I'm just sheltered. I don't understand. Big cities, they scare me.
It's root for the A.
Unfortunately, it is kind of true.
You don't win, it's a shame.
Well, where were we last week? I've got a story. I was on assignment in Burkina Faso, so what about you guys?
You were what?
It was a very, very busy production week here at the PC Gamer compound. And We were working late into the wee hours of the night getting this fine publication out to all you readers.
I believe I was eating cheesecake.
And Norm, that's why you didn't hear from Norm last week.
That's not good when you have a cold, Norm.
I know, it's not good. Oh,
all that dairy and the
sugar,
mucus.
Yeah.
And the.
Wait a minute, I'm curious as to where you got the cheesecake.
And that's why it was not shared with the rest of us.
That's a good question, too.
You're fired, Norm.
Oh,
get
no.
Out.
I quit.
Whatever.
You can't quit because you're fired.
I'm sure Maximum PC would love to have our slappy seconds.
Well, I'll bet more than one of our listeners out there is wondering what the hell I meant when I said ex-senior executive intern Norman Chan. Norm, do you want to break the news?
I am no longer a part of the PC Gamer family.
Dun, dun, dun.
That's not exactly
even,
true.
Even more important, he's also no longer an intern.
Wait.
After an epic 7 years.
8 years. If
eight
I do believe that's correct. I am now working for Maximum PC, so my slave driver is Will Smith.
Although you're still going to be doing your column here, the Killing Box.
That's
column.
Correct, yeah. I'll still be doing Killing Box.
So you're still a part of the PC Gamer family. And you're still doing
so.
You're still going to be doing some reviews and previews and stuff for us.
You're also like our local boy makes good, you know, story. So we'll be trotting you out at every opportunity.
But no longer.
We picked Norm up at a shelter, at an orphanage.
Right.
And look what he's become. Look what he's become.
We made you Mahogany.
We've already scheduled the unmaking.
Oh no.
Well, but we're in all seriousness, we're very, very excited for you, Norm.
A round of applause, great. Everybody.
Yeah.
Congratulations,
seriously.
Norm.
We're psyched for you.
But yeah, everyone don't freak out because he's still going to be around, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. He's not.
We will miss you up here in the Asian compound. We had a little cubicle where all the Asians were sort of annexed into, so. But now
liberated.
We're spreading throughout the building. He's still in the same building, you know, third floor. We're on the fourth floor.
He's just about 10 feet lower than he is right now.
Exactly. No, it's exactly right.
That's right. You sit in almost the exact same spot right downstairs, don't you?
Yep.
I thought that was Dave Murphy's desk directly below you.
Well, it's close.
Not for long.
Watch out, Murphy.
Well, congratulations, Norm, and I'm glad you're a part of Future. And still part of the PC Gamer family. It wouldn't be the same without you.
True enough.
It would be better.
Well, there has been a lot of news in the past couple of weeks as we've been away. Again, we apologize for no podcast last week. We will try to make it up to you with an extra juicy episode this week. In the news this week. What is hot? Apparently, Age of Conan is hot. In fact, it has been called one of the fastest-selling PC games of all time.
According to their own press release.
According to their own press release. However, I can tell you that this weekend, a friend called me desperately on Saturday night, and he's like, have you got a copy of Age of... He says, you must. You work for PC Gamer. You have to have a copy. And I'm like, yeah, and? And he says, I can't find one. He went to every store that sells PC games in San Francisco. Every single store was sold out. Everyone. Then he started calling around the Bay Area, Daly City, Colma. All the outlets, totally out of boxed copies.
He should have checked Craigslist.
Well, you know, I think he did say that he saw...
Why would it be all over Craigslist? That's kind of funny.
You're talking about two different things.
I'm talking about the collector's edition, but there's actually non-collector's editions on there as well.
Yeah, our magazine, in fact, with neither. With just the... what was it?
The code for the Totem of the Origin. The
Totem.
Yeah.
Going on eBay for $35.
Let's check that right now.
Yeah.
This is hot.
Don't tell them. Don't tell them that you can get the magazine for $10. That would ruin their party.
So this is a thing. This is hot. Did anyone anticipate that it would be this
oh my word. It is. It's going for $35.
Now, are there actual bids on that?
Hang on.
There was four bids on the one.
Here's the thing. Funcom has always said that, and I also always told this, that there are about 500,000 people sign up for the beta. And I mean, betas for MMOs are incredible. It's a smart thing because you get people totally invested in the game before, right. You know, for free. And then when it comes out, now they pay $50 plus $15 a month. Plus, it did that pre-sale or the early access version of the game where you paid like an extra $10 and you get to play 5 days earlier. And that sold out. So that was a pretty good indicator that the game was going to do well. It's selling 400,000 copies or 400,000 new accounts being set up in the first week is really good, but I'm surprised because, you know, there are a lot of other MMOs out there. And I know everyone wants something that's not World of Warcraft, but why this?
Yeah.
Wow, there are like a bunch of PC gamers on here. Sorry to interrupt. But
it does seem like... like this is, you know, too close to World of Warcraft to really resonate. But I guess the fact that it's M rated, there is blood, there's some partial nudity. You know, it's something a little bit different, at least in tone, if not in setting.
There were nipular textures, were there not?
There are
nippulage.
Yeah, and you're treated to some of that just the character creation screen if you create a female character, which, you know, is kind of unprecedented.
So we know, I mean, Kristen's in, she's played obviously during for the story.
I played in the beta, yeah. Mm-hmm. I played the first 20 levels in the beta.
And Dan, you've been playing, and I've been playing.
I've been playing too.
You want to talk about, oh, and Andy, you've been playing.
Yeah.
So you want to talk about what are your thoughts on it so far?
Yeah. So far, I'm only level 12. I haven't had that much time to throw at it yet. But, you know, so far, it's I don't know, it's very MMO-y. You know, it's not a whole lot different in actual play, except for the combat. The combat is kind of new and exciting in that, you know, there are the three defense zones that the enemies have, and you have to put a little bit more effort into attacking them. You have to attack them from the right angle, unlike WoW, which is just attack, 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 attack. So it's more interesting in that respect.
Andy,
my thoughts.
What are you playing as?
Oh, I'm being the Dark Templar class. And I didn't really realize that was such an experimental class, sort of like a dark paladin, magic user, soldier, a lot of life tapping going on. I'm not very far. I'm only hit level 8 so far. And I agree with Dan. It is totally MMO-y, and I don't really know if it's going to hold my attention. But I do like the single-player stuff so far. I've been doing the night missions, and I actually find it kind of fun. I will say, though, that I did do one of my finishing moves, and I got a decap already, and it totally caught me by surprise.
Oh. Yeah, I've had two decapitations already.
Oh, I was
really?
Under the impression that, like, because Kristen was
they
talking
were really,
about... Yeah.
I only had two in my whole, yeah. So maybe they may have changed from the beta. They made it easier to get them. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it's actually not that hard. I think you have to wait till your enemy is, you know, relative. It's all about timing.
Right.
You time it so the enemy has enough health so you can kill him with the finishing move, but not kill him in the middle of the finishing move, you can get a pretty cool one.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like if you get one every six levels, you know, that's not
I got lots of amazing finishing moves that were not decapitations. So Norm, they were different.
Yeah, ones. It depends on which weapon, which combo you're using.
Exactly.
What server are you playing on, Andy?
Shadowblade.
Unfortunate. the rest of us are playing on Zug.
He's only level 8, though. It's not too late.
I could start over.
Yes, I suggest you start over. So Dan and I and a bunch of the Max PC staff are playing right now. I'm level 22, I think. So I just got off the first island. I never played any MMOs before aside from City of Heroes. Barely touched it. But I'm liking it. I found myself, I don't want to say addicted, but playing a lot of it. And you can tell my voice is kind of sore because I've been playing lots of Age of Conan.
One thing I really appreciate about it is that the female models are actually really hot. Like, games usually get that completely wrong for some reason. Like, Oblivion is a good example of, like, the female models just aren't very attractive, but then this one, they're all just, like, amazing looking.
Boobies!
So for people who don't know, the first 20 levels, it's kind of like this training ground, and you play through the main story quest at night, which is actually only single player. So what do you guys think about that?
That's what I loved. I mean, that was what I liked. Yeah. That was why I was interested in trying the game out in the first place. And this, I mean, I don't want to give too much away because this is exactly what our cover story is about. But I actually liked it enough that when I had to leave the single player and go into multiplayer, which you have to do a couple times in those first 20 levels in order to level up and keep going, I kind of got irritated. Like, I liked the idea of being in a... You know, Dan and I were just talking about this morning, that it's not even like the quests you're following in the single player are all that different than what you're following in multiplayer. It's still pretty straightforward, like, MMO quests. But something about having them tied to, like, a thematic story made the difference for me. Like, I was much more interested in doing a kind of pedestrian, like, I'm going to collect 20 of something if it fit into the larger story than I was when I had to go into
it. It's more like a single player RPG.
Yeah.
Right. The difference between this and WoW that we were talking about was that the story in this has to do with your character individually, whereas WoW it's like there are these events going on in the world at large. Go out and, you know, be a part of it. This is more about, you know, discovering about your character and, you know, what your destiny is, which is a little bit more, you know, about the player than WoW.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
And so I'm checking eBay and you can check the completed items.
Oh, yeah.
Someone paid $75 for an issue on May 21st.
I totally forgot about it.
I'm not going to read his username.
Please
but
don't.
He, $75, and then someone else paid $55.
Yeah, make your checks payable to Logan Decker.
I was just going to say, I think we should contact that seller and say we need a cut of that.
Send a self-addressed stamped envelope.
I think
Age of Conan could also clean up on a lot of people who, you know, didn't or feel somewhat intimidated just jumping into an MMO without having a little, you know, getting their legs wet first and, you know, being able to thrash around a bit before they start with group play, you know? I like the 20-level single-player idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, I haven't even grouped with anybody yet. And now that I think about it, I'm at level 14, not level 12, so... Yeah, I'm most of the way through that introductory period, and I still haven't grouped with anyone because I do tend to solo a lot in MMOs.
That's all I wanted. That's the main reason I haven't gotten like attached for long term with any MMO is I like to solo. But I liked this enough that even having gone through, you know, I think I actually went through 22 levels of the beta, and then stop to make the magazine. I actually am planning to reinstall the retail version and start over. But one of the other things is, and I'm assuming this hasn't changed since the beta, but I was telling Dan this morning, is that there are actually four different single-player stories, depending on, I think it's the combination of, like, culture and class that you're playing. Is that what determines it?
Yeah, it is.
So the four stories are actually intertwining. So if you go back and re-roll, like, start a new character with different... culture and class, you'll play through the level 20 again, and it'll be the same overarching like thematic story, but you'll be playing like a different part of it, and you'll actually sort of like you'll complete quests and things will happen that you'll be like, oh, that's why this happened when I was playing as that other character. So that's a lot more of an impetus for me to start over again.
Yeah, your trainer is different, and you know, instead of killing someone or, you know, assassinating someone, you have to sneak in somewhere and steal stuff.
Yeah.
It also makes it, you know, more interesting because people inevitably, at least long-term players, inevitably create multiple characters.
Right.
And when, when you do that in WoW, like unless you're starting as a different race, and you, I guess, when you start as a different race in WoW, you start in a different area. But but if you wanted to create another character of the same race, you would do the same story over again. So this just adds a little bit of added, extra replayability.
You think Age of Conan is going to keep being like one of? Is it going to be one of the biggest games of the year?
Like, are you asking if it's the WoW killer?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not going to be a WoW killer.
I don't know that it's a WoW killer, but
yeah, you can't kill a game with 10 million subscribers. You just can't do it. I mean,
the thing is, I think
nobody
majority
thought they could topple Microsoft, and look how bumbly they look now.
Does anybody here not think that WoW's kind of jumped the shark?
I don't really think it has, because even with this brand new MMO, aside from the combat, there's not a whole lot it does that WoW doesn't do, and there are things that WoW does that it doesn't do.
Right,
so,
but I guess my point being, though, like the Wrath of the Lich King is about to be released in just a few months, and that will change things yet again for WoW, but how long has it been since the last new content was pushed into that game?
Into WoW?
Yeah.
It's been, I don't know, 4 or 5 months. I haven't been in there
that
very much.
That just seems like a really long time to me for people to be doing the same thing in the same world over and over and over.
You would think so, but these people are really dedicated to it. They've invested hundreds or thousands of hours into their characters, and that's going to take a lot to pull them away. It's going to take a drastically better game.
And never gets old.
This is not it yet. So. And this has some new and interesting stuff. It's definitely going to coexist with WoW, at least for the foreseeable future.
So what do you guys think? What do you think a new MMO, like, what would a WoW killer have to have that would take people away from that game? Because I'm not convinced that it would have to that the game that replaced WoW in people's minds and hearts necessarily has to be that much different. It just has to be new, I think.
A way to migrate your entire guild.
Yeah.
I disagree. I think it does have to be different because there have been plenty of new things that just haven't done it, and you have to break people from the characters that they have invested all their time with, from the worlds that they've gotten used to and that have lived in for thousands of hours.
I think it needs to be an IP that people really want to get to play in.
I would agree, but that doesn't necessarily mean to me that there's different gameplay. Like, I think one of the things we're actually seeing with Conan is people are really interested in it, but just, they're interested in it's the differences are for the most part aesthetic. Like, even with the combat system being, slightly more immersive, I guess if you want to call it that, what we're really looking at is an MMO with like a different and more interesting coat on top of it.
I don't think it has to be. I don't think it should be new IP. I don't think that would work. I think that's actually
not new IP. I think a different IP that people.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry.
That resonates. Right.
Yeah, like not like something established. Because
exactly like a StarCraft or something where people say they have to play in that world. That's where they want to be invested in.
Right.
Like Star Wars. Oh.
I think the problem with Star Wars MMOs and what was the other one, like the Marvel Comics MMOs, City of Heroes, you go in with too many expectations of this is what I should be able to do because you've been reading comics for so long, and then you go into the game and you can't do them, so the game becomes, no matter how good the game is, it becomes something of a disappointment.
It's going to be interesting to see because, there's nothing confirmed, but, you just mentioned a couple of universes, comics universes, the Star Wars universe that people would like to play in, and there's nothing to say that those are not coming. I know that, obviously they've been tried before in one way or another, but I think there are definitely some MMOs on the horizon, some on the not-too-distant horizon.
Those types are doomed, the ones where people come with their own expectations. The ones that have, that don't necessarily aren't weighed down with expectations, like StarCraft. Those can really take off.
StarCraft
has huge expectations.
I would think so.
Yeah, I suppose it's just, if you bring people into a world and they expect to see things to look a certain way and act a certain way, and then they
don't. StarCraft, you're right, is different because that IP originated with computers, with computer gaming. Right, with Star Wars, it was...
I was just going to say, it's never been realized on screen.
Yeah. And it's more abstract in that sense,
Yeah, getting back to the point of, what would it take to draw people away from WoW, I do think that it has to be a game that is more, robust feature-wise and has, the next true next generation of MMO gameplay where, where things operate differently, and you can do things that you can't do in WoW.
I'm gonna disagree with you there. I think the fact that 10 million people of widely varying experience and skills when it comes to playing games on a PC can play that game. Like, part of the reason that that's the case is because it has, there's a certain like depth of story and I guess, you know, gameplay, but not really gameplay mechanics. Does that make any sense? I don't know that actually introducing a whole new way of doing things. I wonder if that would actually kind of put off a lot of the people who are currently playing WoW.
It doesn't necessarily have to be entirely new and alien to those people, but it needs to be a significant advancement. You need to be able to do things that you cannot do now in order to pull people away from what they are invested in. It has to be a measurably better experience, and not just a new world. You know that, because those are a dime a dozen.
I guess.
Well, there's somebody out there who I don't think would like either version, no matter what. His name would be Nolan Bushnell. He was whining last week saying that something called the TPM chip is going to end piracy for all time. Now, Nolan Bushnell is the guy who he's the founder of Atari, the co-creator of Pong. And he was going on and on and on a few months ago about how games are at a race to the bottom.
Also the creator of Chuck E. Cheese, I just need to throw out.
Thank you. He says, you know, of games, he says, they got violent. They went too long form. The violence lost the women, and the long form lost the casual gamer. You know,
pardon me.
Yeah, I know. And he says, I actually sort of stuck to my roots, and the console game market moved away. I'm not really sure what he's getting at there, but what he's been talking about lately is the TPM chip. That stands for the Trusted Platform Module, and he is correct. He is correct when he says that it's something that is already in computers, many computers today. I think it's been built in. It's a chip that's been built into laptops for years now, and what it is it it's one part. It's a key part of a system that creates a very secure and a very secure encrypted system. And they thought, okay, well, let's start putting this in now because we may want to deploy it later. A future version of Windows may want an entirely locked down environment. And Nolan Bushnell says this is the kind of thing that is going to help us end piracy. He's quite insane.
Rendering the PC in a console.
Exactly. I mean, it's just staggering, you know. A completely locked out system will, in fact, end piracy, but then you need people to use it. And I don't see that happening. Let's say that they started building in a TPM chip into iPods that will only let you use, you know, the stuff you buy off iTunes. And then people will simply stop buying iPods, and they will move on to MyPods or FryPods. Anything else, or in severe cases, maybe even a Zune.
Well, I mean, to go with that MP3 player analogy or that music player analogy, Sony put out a Walkman-branded digital audio player several years back that would only play this format that they had come up with, that you had to convert all your music to in order to play it. And shockingly, they didn't sell any of them. And I mean, it's because convenience of being locked into something. So, Logan, can you describe a little bit better what a lockdown system would be like?
Yeah, basically we already have it today. Let's say you want to play a Blu-ray movie on your PC. You have a Blu-ray player. Now you put the Blu-ray disc into the Blu-ray player in your computer, and you're not going to necessarily get the full resolution on your monitor unless every link, when that signal travels from your disc through the video card to the monitor, every link in that chain has to support something called HDCP. High Definition Content Protection, I believe, is the acronym. So that means your video card has to support it, your optical drive has to support it, and your monitor has to support it. If any one of those components does not support HDCP, you're going to get a downsampled version of that Blu-ray disc. In essence, you're not getting what you paid for because you don't have the right hardware to show it. And HDCP equipment does is make sure that signal remains locked down, so you can't copy it. Now, everybody already knows, like, Blu-ray was cracked, you know, practically before it even came out. They updated the encryption and said, well, this is going to last at least a few years. The crack for that update was cracked the day they made the press release announcement. I mean, people have got to understand, you know, I understand that, you know, DRM as its uses and it's necessary, but it's not the answer. It never is going to be.
Yeah, and this system, like, you know, suppose they have a chip in your motherboard that I don't even know how this would work exactly. I mean, they would have to build into the software, okay, check for this chip, right, or something like that.
Yeah.
And what exactly keeps the crackers from hacking that out of the EXE, like they do with the disk check or anything else?
Power Sim the PC works because the PC is inherently an open development platform, and that's, you know, as long as that's the case.
This actually began years and years ago with an initiative Microsoft put forward to do this very thing, to make the PC a secure environment for developers. It was called Palladium at the time, but that was too catchy. All right. And when people started criticizing Palladium, they didn't want people talking about it because the whole idea was, you know, this is supposed to be somewhat secret. We don't want everyone to know about it. We don't want people talking about it. So they changed the name Palladium to Next Generation Secure Computing Base, or NGSCB, knowing that nobody was going to go, you know, you can't even say the acronym barely, NGSCB. And now the TPM is an extension of the Next Generation Secure Computing Base, blah, 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 blah. It's sort of, it's a plan that they're putting in place piece by piece, you know, that someday, you know, they hope to sort of deploy as a completely protected system.
Now,
open up a new market, you know.
Yeah. Now, okay. Let's assume that this chip is in, you know, just about every computer out there right now. Just for the sake of argument, say it's already in. Okay. So, say they did flip this on, I don't know if this would actually be like a noticeably bad thing for gamers, because it would increase security at least to some extent. Mm-hmm. You know, for the 5 minutes before they crack it. But would we even see it like when we're running a game if we have that chip?
Not necessarily. Absolutely not.
So I mean, in theory, this could be one of the less obtrusive.
In theory, absolutely.
In theory, yeah.
Yeah. In theory,
practice could be an entirely different situation.
It always depends on how they deploy it, you know. You know, one of the problems is companies that do these initiatives are rarely noted for their restraint. You know what I mean? It's like, let's say you have a way of making sure that nobody copies your DVDs, and then you think, hey, wait, I've got this power. I can control how this DVD is viewed, so I'm going to add previews to it. I'm going to make the experience even more annoying, you know? Hey, we have a completely protected system that plays these games. These games will only play on this system, so let's triple the price. I mean, they can't take the games to another system because it doesn't have TPM.
As a side note, to any like DVD executives listening, there's nothing that makes people want to pirate your movies more than force run trailers in front of a movie.
Yeah, it's just
Stop doing that.
Show some restraint, and you know, let people enjoy your product. So that's why, you know, initiatives like these, they always bother me, because you know it's not going to stop. Even if they could stop piracy, which they can't, you know it would never stop there. Okay, we eliminated piracy. Now how can we use this trusted computing base to further our, you know, interests, to further erode consumer rights? No, you can't back up your disks. And if they scratch, tough, buy another one, you know? It's not good news in the long term for the consumer, and none of these companies have made a good case about why it would be. So, ha ha ha.
We shouldn't though be you know all doom and gloom about this though, because A, like, nobody has announced plans to make use of it.
Nobody. That's a great point. Nobody has made announced plans. You know what? This could be just for computers that are used at Los Alamos, for all we know.
I was just going to say, they could be just as surprised to hear that this is in there as everybody else is. They're
exactly.
All just like, hey, what's this thing? No one's talking about.
It's something that they put in place, you know, because they wanted to get it out there, and they knew they may be able to deploy it. But when I say deploy, it doesn't mean your chip is going to turn on in the middle of the night. You know, deploy it among systems that have other components. that work with that chip. Because right. if just one chip isn't going to, you know, secure a system, all the components have to be secured as well. So this is part. This is one part of a constellation of components that need to be put together to make a secure and piracy-proof computer. And it does have good applications, important applications, just not for gamers.
Yeah.
Well, now that I've gone on for rant for a while, let's bring in another ranter. His name is Alex St. John. He's actually a famous ranter. Alex St. John is one of the co-creators of DirectX for Microsoft, and he went on to found his own company, Wild Tangent, who are best known for some of their casual games. And he's saying lately that in-game ads don't work. Sound off, people. Do in-game ads work? Anyone play Rainbow Six Vegas out there?
Yeah, I don't know.
Have you started using Axe Body Spray? I have.
Yeah, and I don't see any of us driving Dodge cars or, you know, using Axe Body Spray.
Nobody's even noticing these ads. He's saying if you put an ad in a game instead of a loading screen, he says you're losing the eyes. You know, nobody's really taking it in other than to say, oh, God, look at that ad. Let me go back into the game.
Well, there's a difference. I mean, it's semantics, right? What does he mean when he says it doesn't work? Do people notice it? We notice it. We know that we can name the three big ads in Rainbow Six Vegas, too. But, you know, working, will we ever buy those products because of this game?
I don't know how they can measure that.
Well,
you can make the same argument. You can make that very same argument about any form of advertising. You know, I notice McDonald's ads, but they make me hate the company so much that I refuse to ever shop there. So, I mean, that's not really what they're measuring. They measure, you know, the impression. Do they leave their brand on, you know, in your brain, which they most certainly do if you can name the three biggest advertisers in Rainbow Six Vegas.
But to that point, that impression, measuring the value of that ad, according to Alex St. John, you can't measure the value of the ad. The idea of how much you've paid and what you got for it isn't trackable.
Well, I have to agree with Dan. Like, he's trying to measure something that they've been trying to figure out how to measure in advertising for as long as it's been around. Mm-hmm. You know, the only way to – that's why you can measure sort of, you know, click-throughs online. Like, there's no way to measure a visual impression. All you can do is
look at – how many people saw it.
Yeah, or – and then from that, how many people saw it and remembered it. And to be perfectly honest, you know, I'm not even sure that they've really figured out the true link between – how many people see an ad and how many people buy the product. Like, it's really kind of impossible to tell with I think a few exceptions, whether or not an ad campaign, you know, depending on where it's been launched and what medium, like, directly results in spiking product sales.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
What
is he getting at?
Well, what he's getting at is, you know, maybe the way this should be done is, well, no surprise, the way Alex St. John is doing it with Wild Tangent, which is, put the ads in places like loading screens and then let the game be free. Then you've got a trackable, you know, ad. You know how many eyes have watched it. You know how many people have been exposed. You know, you get information, you get feedback from that ad, and then the gamer gets a free game.
So this is what I've been saying. I've said this several times on this podcast where you know, the only place where it makes sense to put ads in a game is on the loading screen.
Yeah, would anybody here mind that?
Well, it depends. I would mind if they put ads on the loading screen and then charge me full price for the game, because, I mean, what's my incentive to buy that game instead of a game that, you know, doesn't bombard me with ads for the same price?
Yeah.
So, I mean, with television, we put up with television and radio, we put up with ads because they make it free, and with magazines because they make it cheaper than you know, a subscription doesn't cost $100 a year because of that. So, you know, but in this case, the price of games is established at $50 on the PC. So if I'm being bombarded with ads, then, you know, they're making more money out of that, you know, off of me on a continuing basis going forward. So why am I paying full price for it?
You can also, just to complicate it even further, you can also just turn the page in a magazine. You can, or I suppose if you have TiVo, you can actively fast forward past the ads on TV, which is not something you could do on the loading screen of a game.
Oh, excellent point. Yeah,
well, a captive audience. So
unless you buy a faster computer, then it loads faster. It's kind of like fast forwarding.
Great. Hardware manufacturers everywhere are like rubbing their hands and Yeah.
Well, it's working for Wild Tangent. When they started putting the ads in front of the games and making the games ad-supported that way, and rather than... I remember an old game they had that was great, one of my favorites, Tornado Jockey, put ads on billboards. So if, when you tried to throw a billboard, you saw the ad on the billboard. Didn't really work, right? So when they took the ads out of the game and put them in the loading screens, their ad revenues went up 400% that year.
Really?
So that just means that, you know, with their new method, it was tracked better. Or they had actually had a way to track.
Well, we don't know what their tracking method was before.
I remember seeing something. I'm not sure who it was exactly. It might have been like Massive or one of those people, the other in-game advertising firms. But they were saying, oh, you know, it might have been EA with Battlefield 2142, where they could actually keep track of like how many times like the ad showed up on screen. So they can kind of track your mouse movements, and if you go over an ad, they track that.
So and it might not be just, you know, because they couldn't track them. Their ad revenues may have gone up 400% their gross revenue, the money they were taking in, simply because now they had something that was of, you know, you knew that people were looking at it, and therefore it's more, you know, it's much more attractive to advertisers because they know eyes are on that ad.
Yeah, I imagine they probably set up a demo of this. You know, it's like they would have a one computer where there's a game with in-game ads, and they run through it really quick and say, "Did you see the ads?" And then the next one they show, you know, the ad on the loading screen. Did you see the ad? And the answer is going to be overwhelmingly yes, more on the loading screen ad.
Plus, you get the good association. You see an ad, then you play a fun game, and you destroy an entire city with a tornado.
Right.
I'm sorry, that was entirely tasteless, considering. Recent events. I retract. You know what? I'm going to abruptly change the subject. Id leaves the ESA. More drama.
Leave the ESA as well?
LucasArts is out. It is out. Activision Blizzard is out.
Would it be quicker to list who's in?
who else was it, Kristen?
Fine by me. No, those are the three who left.
Okay.
I said, good. It's fine by me.
Well, yeah, I mean,
I find the
ESA
to be an increasingly useless organization.
Yeah, I mean, what have they done for us lately? I mean, they kind of neutered E3, so it's no longer kind of the festival it used to be. What else have they done for us lately?
Really, all from you know, mostly what I've seen lately, and certainly somebody can feel free to argue with me, but mainly what they do is find ways to force people to put their logo with the ratings on things and then find them when they don't. That's pretty much what they do.
Wow.
Well, is that the ESA or the ESRB that does
No,
that?
That's, well, it's ESA that enforces that.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's just they just don't seem to be doing anything useful. And I can certainly understand why these companies are leaving if they don't, like, you know, there's a membership fee attached to this. So if they're not getting a return on that investment, why are they hanging around? I'll be surprised if that's
exactly what developers seem to be saying.
Yeah, I'll
and
be surprised.
You know, Dan's right. It is the ESRB that enforces that, but I don't like them either.
I will be surprised if this exodus does not continue.
So does this mean that it isn't going to show anything at E3?
They're not allowed to. They're not part of the ESA.
Which doesn't mean that they can't be in the area having things in nearby
hotels.
Sure,
but they cannot.
They had said that they will have snipers.
I have to imagine that anybody who's not officially, any large developer or publisher who's not officially participating in E3 is very keenly aware of the fact that all journalists and related folks will be in the area. Why wouldn't you do the same thing? Why not not have to pay the exorbitant membership fees, but just capitalize on the fact that everybody's going to be down there anyway?
Yeah. Makes perfect sense. That's no different at all than E3 was last year, which was a bunch of hotel rooms spread out around. This is just, you know, the E3 will be in one area, and then everybody else will be in their own hotel rooms showing off their game. So it's the exact same thing.
For what it's worth, you know, I know we've talked about this in the office a lot lately. You know, E3 last year was, I think, by all accounts, certainly in this part of the office, a real bust. We didn't feel like we got a lot of really any information. There were no announcements made. It felt like just sort of a crazy standoff. Everybody was waiting to see what everybody else was going to do, so nobody did anything. And so I think in the E3 is not until when, July, but already all of us have spent quite a lot of time going around to different editors' days and seeing pre-E3 things and, you know, stuff that, you know, will be for preview but you can't talk about yet. It's turned into this sort of like 3-month extravaganza, and it's a little unclear to us still whether or not we're really getting much news out of it. I'm not sure it's helping the industry at all, nor do I think it's helping gamers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hopefully they'll, you know, if the ESA just completely collapses, hopefully something will rise from the ashes.
Yeah, there's well, something I mean, to fill that, you know, void. In fairness, I'm not saying that I want the ESA to collapse. I'm just saying that I want them to do is be an organization and thus organize.
Yeah. You know, do I'd something like to, for gamers.
Yeah, you know, if the whole idea is to be essentially an advocacy group for gaming and gamers, then do that. I think while we all had various problems with the old E3 in so much as it grew to like, it went past being a circus and grew to this sort of like Vegas-esque, you know, over the top.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Everybody just came home like sick and exhausted and so bombarded with information that it became sort of unclear, you know, what was going to be most important sometimes. And then it so swung back the other direction last year that there was sort of nothing. Like I think the general feeling in the industry is, hey, we kind of want our circus back, but let's make it like a useful circus. Yeah. You know, let's like, yeah, I mean, I think we all miss kind of the pageantry, and you know, we miss the pageantry, and we sort of miss, like, it used to be great for the industry and for gamers to get, you know, there was tons of like mainstream press coverage about what was coming up, and that didn't really happen last year because there wasn't anything for those guys to cover.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it would be great to see some of that happen again. I think it would also maybe hone, you know, developers and publishers into, I think there's a lot of people that feel like it's, you know, the insider information I get from developers is that E3 really like screws them up. It screws up their development schedules. It puts them back by you know, a month plus, but they have to stop working on the games they're developing and start creating assets or whatever for
demos.
For E3. Yeah, demos. Yeah, just doesn't seem like a smart way to be doing business. Not when it already takes years to put out a game at this point. Good game, like why delay things?
Yeah, imagine that if they had to do that for Indiana Jones and Iron Man and all that, like last year, you know, bring all the cast together and film special scenes and.
But I mean, they do have to, you know, at some point they do have to create all those materials to show off their game and advertise and get it out there.
Right, so, but why not do it? Why not work it into sort of the natural part of your development schedule instead of shoehorning it every year into this sort of 3 months just before the summer happens? It's kind of the same argument, you know. I think we've all like turned over in our heads time and again whether or not it's a good thing or a bad thing for the industry that all these games get released at the holidays.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's great because people are, you know, the business argument is, listen, people are already out in the stores buying things, so you want to put stuff out there for them and your sales will jump. But, you know, the unfortunate thing that we've all seen happen is great games sometimes just get completely lost in the shuffle.
So here's a question, though. Since developers have always been well aware that they have to spend this time to create these E3 demos and trade show demos in general, why is it like a surprise for them? I mean, shouldn't they have built this into their schedules?
I don't think it's a surprise for them. I don't think that's it. I mean, I think it is built into the schedules. I don't think it's that they're shocked. It's just that they're sort of like, okay, what are we, you know, in the long run, like, why is, you know, it's built into their schedules. What I'm saying is it may not be the natural time for it to be built into the development schedule. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, if you're looking at the, you know, the lifespan of your development cycle, like, I guess it's entirely possible that for some of them, like, hey, 6 months down the road would have been the better time for us to do this. Like, hey, we actually have to stop working on this thing that moves the ultimate retail version of the game forward and, like, go this other direction to make this thing that we weren't actually quite ready to make.
And speaking of great games that don't get their due, I believe we have the ultimate in Beyond Good and Evil, which was just announced, the sequel just announced in Paris. Yay! That news is just fantastic. That's what I say. If you haven't played the game, you better get on eBay right now. Actually, it's $10 on Steam.
Right? Yeah, it is on Steam? Oh, good. I'm going to play it.
Yeah. Screw eBay.
And the fact that it was announced in Paris makes it so much more glamorous.
Although, I got to say that trailer that they put out, the teaser trailer, that nearly put me to sleep.
Yeah, but yeah, I think they... It was just like...
Well, would you get it if you played the first game?
If you played the game, like, that's a big deal. Like, Paige is back, and It's a game that the thing I love about it, everybody can enjoy this game, and everybody I know who played it, no matter what their genre, preferred genre is, first-person shooters, you know, people who hate consoles, everybody I know who played this game loved it.
I have not actually played it yet, so I'm waiting for Logan to bring in his copy so I can play
it. Yes. I played it through three times.
Wow. Are there lots of bees in it? I don't like bees.
There are bee-like creatures, but they are not bees, so you need to be aware of that.
Say no more.
Say no more. But you can also check GamesRadar.com/PC, because I'll be telling you very soon exactly why this is such great news and why the original game was so fantastic. Leaked StarCraft 2 specs. Are they real? Dan, what do you say?
Ready? Time starts now.
I'm going to say probably not, just because... So this I guess it's a fan site, StarCraft.inkgamers.com. So they posted a transcription of a snippet from a Spanish magazine called Micromania that claims to have specs for StarCraft II, system specs. And the minimum requirements they have are Pentium 4, that makes sense, a gigabyte of RAM, that's not out of line. 1 megabit ASDL for online, and then they say they require a 7 series GeForce card, which is ridiculous. There's no way that the Blizzard would ever require that. The only thing that they've ever said that they will require is Shader Model 2, which goes all the way back to the GeForce 5 series cards, right, Logan?
Way back there.
Yeah, so if they required more than a 6800 for this game, I would be absolutely shocked, because the 7 series are Shader Model 3, aren't they?
Yeah, I believe they
are. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they are. So why would they say they're going to require Shader Model 2 and then require a Shader Model 3 card and not make use of Shader Model 3?
Clearly, we're looking at a pile of hooey.
Yeah. Besides which, there's a reason that the Blizzard does not, and you know, no developer puts out system requirements any sooner than they absolutely have to. It's because they're constantly optimizing the game to make the system requirements lower. So I mean, my guess is this may have leaked out of some like the friends and family beta or alpha that they work on in at Blizzard. So this would be an unoptimized build at best. So I think this is crap.
Another rumor. Destroyed a PC gamer rumor mill.
They may as well just say we hate kimchi and see how that goes over in South Korea.
You know, they may as well.
Should we take some reader questions?
Okay, well, there's one question I know we're running short on time, but there's one reader question I did want to answer. I just want to put a little caveat in here, though. So this is a reader who was pinging me on Steam, and it's a really good question that he had, so I wanted to make sure it got answered, but I don't want to necessarily encourage people to ping me about the podcast on Steam. I love talking to our readers, I do, and I think most people will... who've chatted with me will tell you, like, when I have a few minutes, I answer lots of reader email, and I'll always chat when I have a few minutes. But honestly, the reason I'm not logged on to Steam all the time is when I do log on, it's because I'm getting ready to, like, play a game, which I so rarely have time to do uninterrupted now. So I definitely, if you guys have questions, for sure, email me. You can email me at editor@pcgamer.com. You can email me even at my email address, which is kristen@pcgamer.com. That's totally fine. But I would much rather hear from you that way when I actually have time to answer you, and I'm not like, I'm trying to play, you know, Portal.
Reminds me of when my mom used to knock on the bathroom door, and I'd be, Mom!
I feel bad. I hate to ignore people, and I never, you know, if somebody IMs me or pings me in-game, I always answer them, but it, you know, I feel bad because it's kind of hard to do sometimes, so... But this is a really good question, so I want to make sure that we answer it.
This is Andrew from Montreal, Canada, also known as Stealth Silver on Steam. A few months ago, I decided to pick up Company of Heroes in my local EB Games because I missed it when it was first released, and I know you guys were very fond of it. I decided to go with the Game of the Year edition because it said on the box that it came with a couple extra maps. I brought the game home, installed it, everything was fine, until when I had to sign up for the online service, it told me that it couldn't verify the media. I called tech support, and it turns out, thanks to the new Secure ROM, bundled with the Opposing Fronts patch. You have to actually register online to play, and mine wasn't working, so I had to actually wait a couple weeks for the patch to come out to fix mine. I went on the forums, and it turned out that a lot of people are having the same issue. I was wondering, if you guys were reviewing this game as of when I bought it, and it turned out that you actually couldn't play thanks to the copy protection, you had to change your disc, would that affect your score? Thanks. Bye.
That is a very good question, because this does happen from time to time. There will be some major error that'll just make a game unplayable. And if it's unplayable, then we can't review it. So I don't know if you can say that affects our score, because there's no score given. We try and review the game and not the copy protection. Do you dock a movie because it's out on Blu-ray and you don't like HDCP? That's not really what we're after here. We want to say how good is the game. Mm-hmm. So as long as it works, then fine. And if it works but like it's crashing, that's interfering with the game experience and yada yada. But if it doesn't work, then we can't review it.
Fair enough.
Yeah, is that a satisfactory answer?
Absolutely.
Okay, everybody, playlists. Well, I've been on a crusade to play all the entire Ultima series, beginning with number one, all over again. But before I started, I got pulled into Mass Effect. So I think I will be completing that first. I finally finished Rainbow Six Vegas 2. Fantastic. Loved it. But now I'm getting sucked into Mass Effect. I'm churning on through to the end. Kristen, how about you?
I've dropped everything because my copy of Lego Indiana Jones showed up today. So
Whoa!
That's really all I give a hoot about.
Whoa!
So I just started to install it just before I had to leave for a meeting, and now I'm back, and as soon as this podcast is over.
Stop the press.
Get out my way, people.
Now, Logan, didn't you say you were having some trouble getting into Mass Effect?
In the emotional sense. No.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still waiting for it to really hook me. I'm not that far in yet. I just started wandering around, shooting the gas bags.
Okay, so you're on the first mission.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I agree. It did take a little while to grab me just because the universe is entirely new. Like it's
I'm willing to, to put in the time.
Yeah, and it is different from KOTOR. Like KOTOR grabbed me right away because they're like, oh my
exactly,
god, this is Star Wars.
Yeah, I knew that the second I was in KOTOR, I was there.
Yeah, but this one has a little bit of a ramp up. But once it grabs you, you got to see it to the end.
Well, I figure it must because everybody loves it. I mean, every single person I talked to who've played it, I mean, it's just nuts.
Best story ever.
All right, see, I'm willing to ramp up.
Oh.
I wouldn't go that far.
I'm going to go buy it right after this game.
Yeah, I wouldn't go so far as to say it's the best story ever, but it's a very good story.
Well, what
best
have you been
science
playing?
Fiction story, Dan? I want ever in a game.
What about BioShock?
I even say it's better than BioShock.
Really?
From start, it's more fulfilling than BioShock.
It is a more epic story than BioShock, but BioShock I think might be more. I think it might have a better twist to it.
No, BioShock is a better twist. There's no twist here. In that same sense, but it is such a rich universe.
Yes, it is a very, very rich and fully realized universe.
Well, Dan, what have you been playing this week?
These
past 2 weeks.
Well, I did play Mass Effect, and you can read my review on gamesradar.com/PC. And I also just got around to finishing Assassin's Creed. I'd gotten like almost the end and then gotten sidetracked by many different things. But finally finished it. Ending battle was a little bit underwhelming, but it was definitely an entertaining game.
Mm-hmm. And how about you, Norm?
H. Conan, and I beat Mass Effect over the weekend. That game is not only is it great; it's gorgeous. It's one of the best looking games I've played.
It is. It is a fine looking game. Do you think you'd play it again?
Oh yeah! Oh definitely.
I did leave out that I've been playing Conan as well. And yeah, I will be playing Mass Effect as well, again as well, because with BioWare games, they always make me want to go back and just act like a total jerk.
Yeah.
Because I'm a softie, so I play through the first time. I play through, you know, as a good guy, but I always want to go back and see what would happen if I totally screwed that guy over.
And do you, you know what? It's funny that you should say that, because in fact, even when I was playing Mass Effect, like, I try it every time. It's just so against my nature. Even in a stupid video game, I cannot roleplay the ass, like, yeah. The complete evil guy.
I'm a goody goody.
I can't do it. I just don't have, like, it's not fun. I don't have a good time.
Well, for me, it is fun, but I don't want to, like, close off all the opportunities I might have had if I kept somebody alive. You know, because if you kill somebody off, you don't get to do quests that they might have given you.
Yeah, so, that's true.
So the first time I play through, I want to play. You know, I want to have all the choices. I want to do everything I can. So I try and take the good path, but then I want to go back and see what would happen. Well, what if I had done the other thing?
Right. Well, they don't give you the quest, but they do give you their screams. So, you know, six of one, half a dozen of the other. Andy, what have you been doing when you weren't welding our podcast together for us?
Well, I mean, we didn't have one last week, so mm-hmm. I played GTA. I finished GTA 4 finally, but we don't need to discuss that. But I did start up Age of Conan, and I've been obsessed with this little game that I saw a preview for a couple months back, and I was like, I bet I'm going to love that game. And it finally came out on Steam. It's called Trials 2 Second Edition. It's like this little motorcycle trial game where you have your little motorcycle avatar, and it's like physics-based. It's basically like a really elite version of Line Rider. It's just on Steam for like $9, and it's freaking awesome.
Is it an elite version of Line Rider or a elite version?
A very elite version of Line Rider. It's only in the sort of that you sort of have to go laterally on a course, and you kind of flip upside down, and you can't really change directions. In that sense, so it's sort of like Line Rider, but it's definitely a motorcycle physics awesomeness game.
Excite bike with physics.
Yes. But okay. Very touchy.
It's cheaper than going to see Speed Racer. Ladies and gentlemen, guess what's coming up? Yes, PC Gamers Showdown. Take it away.
Well, Showdown is back. Hopefully everybody remembers from last year and the year before. And the year before that? Are we on the third year now? Yeah.
Yeah, this is the third year.
This is our third year. Showdown LAN, it's a massive LAN event. Last year we had two of them, one in San Jose and one in Indianapolis. Is that right?
Yep.
This year it's three Showdown events. It's us and Maximum PC. The first one is going to be September 5th through 7th, and that one is in Massachusetts. It's at the DCU Center in Worcester, Mass. The second one will be here in California, September 19th through 21st, and that's going to be at the San Mateo Expo Center in San Mateo, California. And then September 26th through 28th is Showdown Illinois in Peoria. Yes, friends, it can play in Peoria.
Hello, Peoria.
Hello, Peoria. So you can register right now at www.showdownland.com. The reason that they're all sort of put together like that is I believe you can actually – it's like a roadshow. So if you are so inclined, you can actually sign up to participate in all three of the showdowns and basically do like an awesome LAN road trip.
And see the world.
And see the world, yes. So we're super excited that there are three showdowns this year. All of your questions will be answered on the website. We'll be talking about it here. It's going to be, you know, Showdown last year, like, it's sort of grown a little bit and gotten bigger and better every year. This year it's going to be really amazing. We have we've an actual like events team that works here at Future now that's working on Showdown, and there's going to be like really neat stuff that they're talking about doing, possibly like a VIP area that you can pay to be in. There's all sorts of really neat stuff. So definitely sign up. PC Gamer, all the PC Gamer editors will definitely be at the Showdown in San Mateo. And at least some, if not all of us, will be at the other events as well. So.
And it's wall-to-wall gear, wall-to-wall games. You can't miss with this one.
I want to come down for the San Mateo one for sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, meet Andy Bellman, producer of the PC Gamer podcast.
I just want to meet the editors of the PC Gamer. That's what I want to do.
Well, definitely. Last year, we just sort of participated really casually in Showdown. We were sort of like walking around, and we judged the best case contest. I think we're going to be much more integrally involved this year. I haven't let everybody know yet exactly how. Right. Be ready for the floor show. But yeah, we'll definitely be more involved this year. It's really fun. Everybody has a really great time, and just, you know, I was really pleasantly surprised by how just how into it everybody got, and you know, the team's doing like crazy. At one point, people were like running around with their clothes off. It was nutty. Remember that? Remember those guys who kept like taking off their pants and running around?
Oh yeah,
they were doing that for prizes. Was that Antec that was bringing?
There was a group that was not doing it for prizes. First, they were trying to get Greg's pants for a prize, or Greg's shoes,
or shoe. Yeah.
Right. But
I think what happened was a wizard had animated the pants.
Right.
And they were trying to get away. So, but I'm not sure.
But then there was some group, like, I don't know, we were all kind of sitting there eating burritos or something, and all of a sudden this group of guys was like, running around the.
No, they were doing that for a prize.
Pants on, so.
They were doing that for a prize. Yeah.
Then what could be better? Not only.
Yeah, I hope they got the prize. Off,
you got a prize.
It seems like they earned it. Well, we've come to the end of our podcast, and now it's your turn. Send your questions to us in MP3 format to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. That's pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com, or just call us toll-free at 877-404-1337 at extension 724 and record your question there. Remember to keep it brief and light on the language. You can also become part of the PC Gamer family by subscribing to PC Gamer Magazine. Just head on over to www.gamesradar.com/PC and click on the tablet on the left-hand side. For the PC Gamer podcast crew, this is Logan Decker saying thanks for listening, and we're looking forward to getting together with all of you again next week. Okay, try these, Dan.
You found them?
Of course I did.
How are you finding them? Did you find them?
What'd you find?
Did you try to scratch you really your
think,
ass or something?
You really think that you can hide anything from me?
Okay, Dan and Logan have a ho-ho war. A ho-ho war. A ho-ho war going on right now where they try to give each other the bag of old ho-hos.
Which are now completely disintegrated.
And last I heard, Dan had taped the ho-hos underneath Logan's chair.
Ooh, excellent.
How did you find them?
Because
he was sticking his gum under
what?
There?
I knew before you put them under there, all right? I liked my business card box gambit. I thought that was very well played, thank you.
I mean, the trick is to put it somewhere where the person would put their hand there without looking, right?
It's that, but also at least go to the point of opening it without knowing what's inside. Mm. So if it's just a blank box, you'd expect it. But if it's a business card box, say, oh, cards, you open it up, ho-hos. This is actually a continuation of Peep Wars from 4 years ago.
Peeps.
We missed you, Andy.
I know. I know. I missed you guys, too. I don't know what I did last week. It was all a bad dream.
Any change? Still the same thing?
Same. Oh.
Tell me. Okay. I don't know what I did. I didn't change anything at all from last week.
Maybe you need to use a different machine.
Yeah.
Sorry, Andy.
We gave you a little puzzle
to put together today. Sorry about that.
No, dude. This is my life.
He likes a challenge. Good man.
I'm an editor.
Next week, we're going to do a memento-style podcast.
Oh.
I've always wanted to try something really crazy like that.
And then you can put it together.
Shades of that game I had to review last month. Last week? Oh, yes.
So, instead of saying next, we say before.
Do you remember when?
I think we should do a Lost style where there's multiple timelines and like people are in time loops and... Like, we're talking to 1996 Dan Stapleton and
There you go.
That would be hilarious.
No one wants to talk to him.
That same month, we can put all of our high school yearbook photos in the magazine for our playlist photos.
Nice.
I had hair you would not believe, people.
Okay, let's do an experiment. Don't give your cat any food for a day.
I know, she would hate me.
Yeah, all right. So, is that real love or not? Or what?
She might eat me.
She totally would. No, she would just eat you. She would torture you for days. And you, what she would do is she would throw you up in the air, and you would fall down to the ground, and your legs would break. They would shatter. And then you would try to crawl away, and the cat would just put out one paw and flatten you.